We continue our learning Leilinish Mastavi by Menachem Rush and Chamiyakom and Pinchas Eliyahu and Chala Paragalin, Mishnah Yudalef, the last Mishnah of Maseches Chala. Ben Antinos, Hela Bechoros Mibav of Lokibul Mimenu. Similar as the previous Mishnah, here is someone who brought up, Ben Antinos brought Bechoros from Chutz Laretz, and in Yerushalayim, they did not accept it from him. So he had a firstborn, and the halacha is that we only bring Bechoros from Eretz Yisrael. So the Kohanim didn't want to accept it from Bavel. And we learn that the din only applies to Eretz Yisrael from the pasuk that compares Maser Sheni Bechor to Maser Sheni. It says, "V'achaltof nei Hashem lokecha b'makom shivchar l'shakem shemosham Maser diganecha." This is Parshas Re'eh. Tirosh Chavi Tzarecha, so mentions Maser, Uvechoros Bechorcha Vitzonecha, and then mentions Bechor. So the same way, Maser Sheni is only brought from produce of Eretz Israel, so to Bechor, as that carbon, the Bechor, the firstborn, could only be brought from Eretz Israel. So they didn't accept. Now what's interesting is the Mishnah implies that if I have a Bechor offering from out from Chutz La'aretz, it can't be brought on the Mizbeach, even once they've been brought there. The problem is that the Mishnah in Temura, in the third Perek, says that, yeah, we don't bring a Bechor from Chutz La'aretz, but if you did, B'di'eved, you're allowed to put it on the Mizbeach. So both the Bavli and Yerushalmi raised this question, and the Bavli explains that, yes, when a Bechor, whether a Bechor that was brought to Eretz Israel may be offered in the Beis HaMikdash, is a Machlokas Tanoim, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yishmael, and our Mishnah follows Rabbi Akiva's opinion, who says, yes, as the Hekesh we mentioned, comparing Bechor to Maser Sheni, and that means that you can never offer it. The Mishnah Temura is Rabbi Yishmael's opinion, who says that B'di'eved it's okay, who does not, obviously, derive, does not learn this Hekesh. Yerushalmi has a different answer. This Mishnah could be even contra Rabbi Yishmael, who normally would allow B'di'eved, does not learn the Hekesh, and would allow a Bechor B'di'eved. The difference here is that they were afraid of Ben Antinos, similar to the previous Mishnah. This person was a chash of a person, and we were afraid that people would think, oh, if taking his karmam from Chutz La'aretz, his Bechor, maybe we're required to bring a Bechor from outside Eretz Yisrael, and therefore lo kiblu mehem. Yosef HaKohen hevi bikure yayin v'shemen v'lo kiblu mehem. He brought, Yosef the Kohen, brought Bikurim from Eretz Yisrael to the Beis HaMikdash. So that's, what's the problem with that? The Kohanim did not allow him to do the whole Bikurim ceremony. Why not? Because he brought them as yayin and shemen, as wine and oil. And the Pasuk says, Mereshis kol pri ha'adama, which seems to indicate that you have to bring the fruit itself, not the juice that comes from the fruit. Problem is that the Mishnah in Trumos, in the 11th parak, we learn that you're not allowed to bring true, you don't bring Bikurim from liquids, but olives and grapes is an exception. So Yayin Mishemen should be okay. We mentioned this when it comes to the bracha. It has its own specific bracha on the juice. The juice is the Ikar. In Hilchos Shabbos, squeezing is an Issur Doraisa with grapes and oil, because the Ikar is that which is extracted. So that should be acceptable when it comes to Bikurim. So how do we understand this Mishnah? So the understanding is like this, that the Torah speaks of truma, of oil and wine, and we would assume the same thing would be true becomes to Bikurim. But the case of Yosef in this Mishnah, Yosef HaKohen, was that he picked the grapes and the olives with the kavana that he was going to bring them as grapes and olives. And then he changed his mind. In the Mishnah, in Trumos, when it says you're allowed to bring wine and olive oil, that's when I had in mind, when I was picking the grapes and the olives, I'm bringing the wine, I'm bringing them as oil and as wine in the liquid form. But when I pick them and I have in mind to bring them in the natural form, so then you're not allowed to change your mind. That's one explanation. The Rambam did not understand Mishnah, but he thinks that the Kavana makes no difference, but rather he thinks that the Mishnah in Trumos, which allows you to bring them as wine and oil, follows the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua, who learns from the law of Truma that wine and oil can be brought as Bikurim. The Tana of Mishnah says, no, we don't compare Bikurim to Truma. Truma is one thing, that can be wine and oil, and Bikurim is another thing. So different ways to learn the Mishnah. The Mishnah continues, Af hu he'ela es banova v'nei ve'so lasos pesach katan b'yushalayim v'hech ziru shelohi kavah adavar l'chova. What else? This Yosef HaKohen very ambitious. He brought his family's children, his family, to do the Pesach Katan, which is Pesach Sheni, in Yerushalayim, and they sent him back. Now, the halacha is that if you can't bring the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan, we know you have to bring Pesach Sheni, which is in the 14th of Iyar. So Yosef, his wife, and his younger children, who couldn't bring the Pesach on the 14th, so they all came on Pesach Sheni. And now, there is an obligation to include our children in at least the first Korban Pesach, to bring them to the Beis HaMikdash for Aliyah L'Regel, for a Pesach Shavuos and Sukkos, as we know. But there is no obligation to bring them for them to be part of Pesach Sheni. There's no obligation for that at all. What about his wife? So Yosef felt that his wife had an obligation to bring the Pesach Sheni, because he thought a woman who didn't bring Pesach Rishon is obligated to bring a Pesach Sheni. However, the Chachamim said, and the Chachamim in the Beis HaMikdash who sent him home, said, no, a woman, yes, can bring the Pesach Sheni if she wants, but she's not obligated to do so. And since Yosef was a chash of a person, once or another, right, same thing, people were afraid that if we allowed him to bring the Korban Pesach Sheni, people would think that children or women, depending on how we understand this Mishnah, are required to bring Pesach Sheni. We wouldn't want people to do that, because then they may think, oh, Pesach Sheni, let's say, falls out on Shabbos, the halacha is that we're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos with the Korban, but wouldn't be allowed for these people, and we wouldn't want people to desecrate Shabbos for their children or their wives for Pesach Sheni, and therefore they sent Yosef HaKohen home, Shelo Yikava HaDavar Chova, so it wouldn't be an obligation, people wouldn't think it's an obligation. Aristone, name of a person, Havi Vikurov Meapamya Vikiblu Mimenu. This Aristone brought his Bikurim from Apamya. Apamya was in Syria. So remember, the Chachamim made a takana that you have to separate Trumas and Masros from Syria. So they also held that you should bring Bikurim from to the Beis HaMikdash from Syria as well. So the Bikurim that Aristone had, they were willing to accept his Bikurim. And the Mishnah explains why. Menei Shomru, Hakone v'Suria, Kikone b'Farvar, Shem Yerushalayim. Because one who acquires land in Syria is like you've acquired land in the Farvar, in Farfareh, in the outskirts of Yerushalayim. What's the Mishnah teaching you? The Chachamim said that if you bring Bikurim from produce that grew in Syria, that's an obligation you have, just like as if you own Yerushalayim. Now, you cannot bring Bikurim from produce that grew in land that grew in any area outside Eretz Israel, because they don't have those areas, don't have the lahalachos of Trumas and Masros. So only the ones now that would reach, and even in lands that are near Eretz Israel that are subject to the laws of Trumas and Masros, there is no halacha. There's something unique about Syria, and that's what the Mishnah is telling you. Why do they allow his Bikurim from Syria? They accepted it because when you buy land in Syria, it's as if you bought in the outskirts of Yerushalayim. We look at Syria as a different, in a unique way, as we mentioned, in terms of Aram Naharaim and Aram Tzava, which are officially part of Eretz Israel, but they had this lower status because David conquered other parts before he conquered the rest of Eretz Israel. But nonetheless, we would accept Bikurim from there. Mazel Tov, and the conclusion of Maseches Challah, we begin Maseches Arlah. Arlah, Torah speaks about in Parshas Kedoshim. It says, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, v'chisavo l'aretz, unatatem koletz machal, and you plant a fruit tree, v'arlartem orlaso es perio shalosh shanim yelochem arilim lo yochel. For the first 3 years, there is a prohibition of Arla, we're not permitted to get benefit to eat or to get benefit from the food for the first 3 years. We'll see, it's not a full 3 years, as we will see. It could be almost a very close to 2.5 years of what the 3 years is, as hopefully we see in the Mishnayos. The 4th year is the Netta Ravai. We mentioned that in the past as well. That's like similar to Maaseh Sheni. We bring the fruit to Yerushalayim. And there's also a din of Halach Lamosh Misinai, that there's an Isser of Arla even in Chutz Laaretz. Halacha Moshe Misinai, although the Pasuk doesn't say so, we have a tradition of Moshe Misinai, it applies there as well. One of the built-in halachos when it comes to Arla in Chutz Laaretz is that if there's a suffix, we have the right to be lenient. If I have a suffik, Arlan Chutz Laaretz, I have the right to be lenient. And there's also a debate whether Arlan Chutz Laaretz is Asur Bahana as well as Achila, or it's only Asur Be'achila. Arla Parakalath Mishnalath, Hano Te'alisya Gulakoros, Patra Mina Arla. You have a person who planted a fruit tree, but he planted as siyag, like suga bashoshanim. It's supposed to be like a hedge around his vineyard. So his primary kavana was that this is not to produce fruit. Yeah, it will produce fruit, but my intention here to serve as a hedge, as the Mishnah says, as a siyag. So that being the case, whether I have to articulate this or not, that was my kavana. Ulakoros, or I planted this fruit tree for its beams. I wanted to use, let's say, I planted an olive tree, but I like the wood of the olive tree. I'm using the wood for lumber. So says the Mishnah, Patman Arla, I have no obligation to separate Arla because it's only when it comes to a fruit tree. The Pasuk says, Unatatem kol eitz ma'achol. Eitz ma'achol means like a food tree for the purpose, a tree planted, the purposes of a fruit. So if I plant it for another purpose, it is pater from Arla, even though it happens to be a fruit-bearing tree. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afilu Amar, Hapnimi, L'machol, V'hachitzon L'siog, Hapnimi Chayev, V'hachitzon pater. Listen to this, says Rabbi Yossi, if the owner plants a fruit tree with the intent that he's going to use the inner branches for fruit, but the outer branches is going to be a siyaga hedge, then guess what? The fruit that grows on the outer branches, meaning those that are serving as a hedge, is exempt from arla, and the fruit growing on the inner branches is chayiv in arla. That's Rabbi Yossi's opinion. And the Tanakhama obviously held that we look at an entire fruit tree. If an entire fruit tree is the kavana is to serve as a hedge, so it's going to be exempt. But you can't split a tree; it's not going to work. A part of the fruit tree produce and to produce fruit, part of it is a hedge. Doesn't work that way. Then it presumably be chayiv in arla. Now, where did Rabbi Yossi get this halacha that you could even split the tree? Because the pasuk says lo ye'ochel, you're not allowed to eat the fruit in the first 3 years. So to call it an eitz ma'achal is superfluous. Of course, if I can't eat, it's obviously an eitz ma'achal. That extra phrase comes to teach me that even if only part of the tree was intended to produce fruit, so that is going to be subject to arla. So that would mean, possibly, that maybe the Chachamim would hold differently, that if part of the tree is already not serving as a fruit, so that would maybe the whole tree would be putter. That one could argue that in the opinion of the Tanakhama. Now, one other thing to keep in mind in the Tanakhama's opinion, if the owner, let's say at the time he was planting the tree, let's say he had intent that it would serve as a hedge or as lumber, but then he changes his mind and then he says, you know what, I'm going to use it for fruit. So as it's growing. So the halacha is that since a tree can be only arla for the first 3 years of its growth, so the tree is that which is produced is only going to be subject to arla for those 3 years. So think about it. If the owner, let's say, planted the tree for beams, and then a year later says, I'm going to use it for fruit, so now it becomes chayav in arla, but just for the next 2 years. But nonetheless, that arla, if that changes within the first 3 years, makes a difference. But let's say you have a tree that was planted for fruit, and then he said, you know what, a year in, I'm going to use it for beams, for lumber, the arla, then it's going to be chayav in arla as well. What about the following case? He planted the tree for the beams, for the siyag, etc., and then he had that in mind for the whole first 3 years, and of course, then it was exempt, right? And then after the 3 years, you know what? I'm going to use the fruit. So the tree, now it's in its fourth year, is the din, we don't look at the, oh well, it's a fourth year, it's neta revai. So there's no neta revai kedusha. Why? Because the neta revai fourth year is only applicable when you had 3 years of arla that preceded it.